It's a vegan restaurant in Texas. We'll be fine. I know how this is going to be. Levi will get to work out of his system whatever's left of his years-old attraction toward me. I will finally get to have some decent sex. We'll both get to do so without the pressure of being in a relationship and the disastrous stickiness that always happens when you let yourself care too much about someone. Tonight's dinner is not going to be a date. Just a meal between two horny friends who happen to share dietary preferences. Still, I find myself putting more care than usual into my appearance. I choose a thin rose gold septum ring, my favorite piercings, and classic red lipstick. I curl my hair to fall in waves down my shoulders. I'm ready well before Levi's supposed to pick me up, so I go wait on the balcony. Schmack has finally gotten back to me, apologetic for having been offline for the best, then worst, then best weekend of my life. Schmack.
STC is grasping. Everyone knows you have no financial interests and are supporting hashtag fair graduate admissions because you believe in it.
Marie. I hate what they said about fair admissions being impractical. Who cares? We can and must do better. Schmack.
Orally.
Marie. Question mark, question mark, question mark? Schmack.
Totally.
Schmack.
Sorry, speech to text. I'm driving.
Marie. LOL. Marie. Where are you going? And does it have to do with your best, then worst, then best weekend? And does that have to do with the girl? Schmack.
I'm taking her out for dinner.
Marie, that was a keyboard smash in case text-to-speech is failing you. Schmack.
It was, thank you.
Marie, I'm so happy for you, Schmack. Schmack.
I am too, though she's still a bit skittish.
Marie, skittish? Schmack.
For valid reasons, but I don't think she's quite ready to admit it to herself.
Marie, admit what? Schmack.
That I'm serious about this. That I'm in it for the long haul. Or at least for as long as she'll have me.
I frown. Wait. Isn't the girl in a relationship? There's no long haul unless she divorces, is there? I want to ask, but I wouldn't want Schmack to think that I'm judging him for taking up with a married woman. I really don't. Especially since her husband sounds like someone I wouldn't mind pushing down the Eiffel Tower stairs. I consider telling him that I, too, am going out for dinner, with camel dick, no less. But I hear a soft noise. A little ball of red and gray is hovering in midair around the feeder, pretty wings beating happily at a fluttering rhythm. The first hummingbird of the year. Hey, beauty! He sticks his thin beak into one hole and leaves before I can take a picture. I watch him fly over the parking lot and notice Levi's truck pulling up. I run downstairs like I'm 11 and heading to the splash pad. I got my first hummingbird, I say excitedly, climbing into the truck. Levi has barely finished parking. Red throat, I didn't get a picture, but they're territorial, so he'll be back. And I'll have the coconut ginger chickpea soup. My sister says that it's uncool to read restaurant menus online, but I fully embrace my obsession with food. I stop. Levi is staring at me open-mouthed. I have hummingbird shit on my face, don't I? He keeps staring. Do you have a tissue? I look around the cabin. Or even a piece of paper?
No. No, you don't.
He shakes his head, lost for words. What's wrong?
You.
He swallows. I.
The dress. You wore the dress.
I glance at myself. Oh, yes, I did wear my Target dress. I thought you said you didn't really hate it.
And I don't.
He swallows.
I really don't.
I take a better look at him and realize the way he's staring, which is, oh. My heartbeat picks up.
Can I kiss you?
He asks.
and I could fall in love with this hesitant, shy version of Levi Ward, the same man who nibbled my throat awake at 3 a.m. to say that he'd die if he couldn't fuck me again. I let him enthusiastically, just like I let him kiss me now, until we're making out like teenagers, deep, fingers holding my neck, tongues stroking, his weight pressing me into the seat. And he's really, really good at this. Charmingly assertive, deliciously insistent. That's his hand on my knee, under my dress and up my smooth leg, up and up until it's wrapped around my inner thigh. A light brush against the front of my panties, and I whimper in his mouth just as he groans. I think I'm already wet. And he knows I'm already wet, because his fingertips slip under the elastic and hook it to the side. I gasp against his mouth, and his thumb slides against my... Someone honks one street over, and we both pull back. Oops. We should probably...
Yeah, we should.
We're both in agreement, and both reluctant. We're slow to let go of each other, and when he turns the key in the ignition, the same hand that uses precision screwdrivers on a daily basis is trembling slightly. I glance out the window. Levi?
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that. I smile. Red lipstick looks great on you. It's not a date. But if it were, which it isn't, it would be the best date of my life. Of course, because it's not a date, the point is moot. But if it were, though it's not, even when I must admit it almost feels like one. Maybe it's that he paid while I was in the bathroom. I briefly protested, but honestly, I'll let any dude buy me dinner until the gender pay gap is ungapped. Maybe it's that we never stop talking. Never, not even for a minute. Just polite nods for Archie, the overzealous waiter, when he kept coming by to inquire about our meals. But maybe it's the hour we spent reframing some of our most traumatic grad school memories. I presented my data during lab meeting, halfway through my first year, and you looked out the window for the entire time. He smiles and takes his time chewing.
You were wearing this,
he gestures in the middle of his forehead,
thing on your hair.
A headband, probably. I was smack in my boho chic phase. I shudder. Okay, you've got a doctor's note for this one, but it was excellent data.
I know. I was listening. Your salience network research, very compelling.
He shrugs. His hand closes around his glass, but he doesn't drink.
It was cute. I didn't want to stare.
I burst into laughter. Cute? His eyebrow lifts, challenging.
Some of us haven't outgrown their boho chic phase.
Uh-huh. What does boho chic mean, Levi?
It's a city in France.
I laugh harder. Okay, another one. That time that friend of yours from microbiology came into lab. That guy you played baseball with?
Dan. Basketball. I've never played baseball in my life. I'm not even sure how it works.
A bunch of guys stand around in their jammies and chat amiably. Anyway, Dan came into lab to pick you up for a game of a sport, and you introduced him to everyone except for me. He nods, tears off a piece of bread, doesn't eat it.
I remember.
We can agree it was a dick move.
Or,
he drops the bread, leaning back.
Or we could agree that a few nights before, after a few drinks, I blurted out to Dan that I was interested in a girl named B. That B's not a common name, and that Dan was totally the kind of person to look you in the eye and ask, aren't you that chick my bro blubbers about when he's sloshed?
My heart skips a beat, but I power through. You can't have an excuse for every single time you acted like a dick. He shrugs.
Try me.
The dress code, a few weeks ago. He covers his eyes.
You mean When I asked you to dress professionally while I was wearing a t-shirt with a hole in the right armpit?
Were you really?
Most of my t-shirts have armpit holes. Statistically speaking, yes.
What's the excuse? He sighs.
That morning, Boris said something to me about how he thought NASA might use whatever they could to get NIH off their backs. He said, I wouldn't be surprised if they got rid of her because of the hair. It was probably a throwaway line, but I panicked.
He lifts his hands.
Then you called me out for promoting gender bias in the workplace, and I felt like a Bond villain bragging about his doomsday device.
I can't believe you didn't just tell me.
In retaliation, I pluck a broccoli rob from his plate.
I'm an excellent communicator with outstanding interpersonal skills, according to my resume.
Mine says that I'm fluent in Portuguese, but the last time I tried to order food in Coimbra, I accidentally told the waiter that there was a bomb in the bathroom.
Okay, last one. What about when you refused to collaborate?
I overheard you through the door.
You told Sam you didn't want to be on the project because of me.
You overheard me.
He sounds skeptical.
Through Sam's solid wood slab of a door.
I bat my eyes angelically. Yes.
Were you eavesdropping in the ficus?
Perhaps. Anything to say in your defense?
Did you leave right after I mentioned that I didn't want the project because of you?
Yep. I stomped my way to my office with the rage of a murder of dragons.
Is that their collective noun?
It should be. He nods.
If you left right after you heard your name, then you didn't hear everything I told Sam. And that misunderstanding is on you.
I scowl.
Is it?
Yep. There's a lesson for all of us here.
He picks up the piece of bread he dropped earlier.
Which would be, don't eavesdrop in the ficus?
Nope. If you eavesdrop, you shouldn't half-ass it.
He pops the bread into his mouth and has the audacity to grin at me. Schrodinger remembers me, possibly from the other night when he slept on my windpipe, gave me suffocation nightmares, and left black tufts of hair in my mouth. He slinks from his spot on the couch the moment we come in and twines himself around my bare ankles while Levi stores our leftovers in his fridge.
I love you, I coo at him. You're a perfect, magnificent beast, and I'll protect you with my life. I will slay a murder of dragons for you.
I looked it up,
Levi says from the door jamb.
It's a thunder of dragons.
Fascinating. I rub the underside of Schrodinger's chin. He squints in feline bliss.
But we like murder better, don't we? Yes, we do.
I glance up. I believe I was promised some anal expression. He shakes his head.
It was to lure you here. Don't believe everything you're told.
You heard that, Schrodinger. Your daddy uses your malfunctioning glands as bait.
Levi smiles.
He's not like that usually.
Hmm?
Schrodinger's shy with most people. Hides under the couch a lot. He used to be very aggressive with my...
The way he trails off has me dying to know.
Your...
He shrugs and looks away.
I lived with a girlfriend. For a few months.
Oh. The cat flops on his side into a waterfall of purrs. Lily?
Before her.
I think I can stop lying to myself and the tiny porcelain frog that passes as my brain and just admit that Levi is the perfect combination of sexy guy, handsome guy, and cute guy. You know when you've been in love with someone for years and then they do something horrible, like forgetting to water your chia pet unicorn or screwing your best friend, and you stop seeing them through rose-colored lenses? All their shortcomings are thrown in sharp relief. Like you just put on 3D glasses for inside ugliness? Well, now that I've gotten rid of my asshole goggles, I can acknowledge that Levi's been eligible bacheloring it up just fine. He'll make some lucky girl an even luckier girl someday. And I have no idea why the idea of him having a live-in girlfriend sends that cold tingle in my belly. We've been fuck buddies for less than 24 hours, for cake's sake. It's not my business. And the last thing I want is another relationship doomed to a messy, painful ending, i.e. any romantic relationship. Schrodinger didn't like her? He gnaws lovingly on my thumb.
To be fair, she was a dog person.
When was this? I ask, as nosy as a curtain twitcher.
In grad school. Before.
He doesn't finish the sentence, but his gaze lingers on me for a moment, and I wonder if he meant before you. Annie used to have a funny theory. We all have a year zero, around which the calendars of our lives pivot. At some point, you meet someone, and they become so important, so metamorphic, that 10, 20, 65 years down the line, you look back and realize that you could split your existence in two. Before they showed, BCE, and your common era, your very own Gregorian calendar. I used to think Tim was my common era, but I don't anymore. In fact, I don't want another flaky, fickle human being to become my common era. You know what would work great as a pivotal lifetime point? Me getting my own NIH lab, which I'm thrilled to say is closer than ever. I almost want to text Annie to ask if new jobs can be year zeros, but I'm not quite there yet. Still, it's nice to know that I could, that the door between us is ajar. Levi wasn't going to say before you, because I'm not his common era. I don't care to be, but I'm positive he'll meet her soon. Probably a girl who's 5'11", knows how to build a microwave from scratch, and has the astounding grace of Simone Biles. They'll produce fierce, athletic kids with scarily smart brains and have sex every night, even when there are grant deadlines, even when the in-laws are in the guest room. Hummingbirds will flock to their yard during the spring months, and Levi will study them from his screened-in porch and be implacably happy. Just like I'll be happy with my lab, my research, my students, my RAs. Yes, they'll all be women. No, I don't care if you think it's unfair. But I'm glad I found out that Levi used to like me. I'm glad I get to have excellent sex for the first time in my life. I'm glad we're doing this sleeping together thing without all the ugly that comes from actually investing in a relationship. I'm glad we can be part of each other's BCE for a while. I'm glad to be here with him. I might even be happy. I think you're the best, I say, ruffling the fur around Schrodinger's ears. He's very small.
Runt of the litter.
I smile at the perfect beanie underside of his paws. I've always loved an underdog. Undercat?
I'm surprised someone who likes cats as much as you doesn't
have one.
I was going to say five.
I chuckle. There is Felicette.
I was thinking more of existing cats.
I glare at him. I'd love to dedicate my life to embodying the cultural archetype of the crazy cat lady, but it's a bad idea.
Why?
Because. I hesitate, and Schrodinger purrs against my fingers. My love for him knows no bounds. I couldn't take it.
Couldn't take what?
When they die. Levi gives me a curious look.
Not for years. Decades sometimes. And a lot happens between the beginning and the end.
But the end does happen. Unavoidably. All relationships between living beings end somewhere, somehow. That's just the way it is. One party dies or is called away by other biological needs. Emotions are transient by nature. They're temporary states brought on by neurophysiological changes that aren't meant to be long-lasting. The nervous system must revert back to homeostasis. All relationships associated with affective events are destined to end. He seems unconvinced.
All relationships?
Yep. It's science. He nods, but then says,
What about prairie voles?
What about them?
They pair bond for life, don't they?
His eyes glint appraisingly, like he's observing a fascinating biological phenomenon. We might not be talking about the misery of having to flush a goldfish down the toilet anymore. Then prairie voles are the exception, because their oxytocin and vasopressin receptors are scattered across their reward systems.
Isn't that biological proof that emotions and relationships can be long-lasting?
Not at all. So you have two cute rodents and they stick together. Amazing. But one night husband vole crosses the highway to catch Ratatouille at the local theater and ends up pancaked by a Ford Mustang, owned by a dipshit who's driving to cheat on his wife with an unknowing college girl. Cue grieving widow vole. It sucks, but it's like I told you, one way or another.
And what happens in between doesn't make it worth it?
Have you ever been left behind? I want to ask him. Have you ever lost it all? Do you know how it feels? Because it doesn't sound like you do. But I don't want to be cruel. I'm not cruel. I just want to protect myself. And if Levi doesn't want to do the same, he's stronger than I am. Maybe, I say noncommittal, and watch Schrodinger gracefully steal to where Levi is standing. So, what's the plan for tonight?
What do you want to do?
I shrug. I don't know. What do you want to do? He smiles at me mischievously.
I thought maybe we could go for a jog.
I'd expected him to be reserved about sex. Not that I'd thought about it very much. But if someone had held a gun to my head and forced me to guess, I'd have probably told them. I bet Levi Ward is quiet in bed. Boring, because he's such a guarded person out of bed. A few low grunts, maybe. A handful of words, all directives. Faster, slower.
Actually, this other angle is better.
I'd have been wrong, because there's nothing reserved in the way he takes his pleasure out of my body. Nothing at all. I'm not sure how I find myself spread out on my stomach in the middle of his bed, trying to breathe steadily as he traces the line of small tattoos down my spine.
The UK,
he says, hoarse and a little shaky.
And I don't know this one or the next, but Italy, Japan.
Italy's a boot. Easy. I push my forehead into the pillow, biting my lower lip. This would be easier if he weren't inside me. If he hadn't pushed to the side the green panties I'd bought to celebrate Blink, the ones that I regretted the second Levi was announced as my co-lead, the ones I didn't think I'd use anytime soon, the ones Levi stared at speechless for a whole minute and slowly, inexorably slid into the hilt.
They're pretty, the outlines.
He lowers himself to kiss the skin of my neck. It makes his cock shift inside me and we both groan. It's just embarrassing, the way my back arches, the way my ass bucks back into his abdomen, like my body isn't mine anymore.
You might be too tight this way. It might be too good.
Sex isn't like this. I'm not like this. I'm not the type to come quickly or uncontrollably or loudly. I'm not the type to come very often. But there's a place inside me that he hits. He found it last night, too. But now, in this position, or maybe just because it's slower, I don't know what it is, but it's even better. He thrusts inside me a couple times, shallow, experimental, and I have to fist my hands into his sheets. They are shaking. There. I have to stop, collect myself, clear my throat. Tense, release. They're my homes. All the places I've lived.
Beautiful.
He presses a soft kiss to the ball of my shoulder.
So damn beautiful,
he repeats, almost to himself, like it's not about my tattoos anymore. Then the mattress shifts. I hear a frustrated groan, and all of a sudden I feel cold. He's not touching me anymore. He has pulled back, pulled out. What are you? I try to turn around, but his hand splays between my shoulder blades to hold me down gently.
Just trying to pace myself.
His voice is all strained, self-effacing amusement. I can't see a smile, but I picture it in my head. Faint, warm, beautiful. I take a deep, shuddering breath, trying to relax into the sheets, feeling his eyes roam my body, his fingers trail down my back, and then he begins to arrange me ever so slightly, tilting my hips at a different angle. Levi exhales.
All those years ago. And then later, there were lots of things that I imagined doing to you. But I always went back to...
He trails off. For a few seconds, I hear very little. But it's okay. I'm unwinding from the trembling, needy, overheated mess he makes of me. And it's good to have a moment to calm down. It'll be nice to keep some dignity in this bed. The palms of his hands move between my legs and spread them apart. My panties are yanked all the way to the side. I gasp, feeling cold air on my core, feeling so open, exposed, it's almost obscene.
You look.
His voice is quiet, and then he half explodes in a low,
fuck.
I'm a fraction of a second from asking him what's wrong with me, when I feel him pull my hips higher. Levi? His tongue, his lips, his nose press into me from behind, and I inhale sharply. First, it's careful, delicate licks, flicking my clit and nudging my opening. Then it's deep kisses, mapping me thoroughly. Oh my God, I moan. His only response is a low, satisfied growl against my folds. And I don't know if it's the vibrations or the enthusiastic way he's working on me, or the fact that he's holding me wide open like I am a feast made for him to consume. But my belly tenses and my limbs are shaking, and keeping my pleading noises in is a losing game. It can't last, not like this. It takes him less than a minute to push me tumbling over the edge. This is not my body. Or maybe it is, but Levi's in charge, and I don't mind. The pleasure takes over, crashes over me like a tidal wave, and before it even dries out, I feel him rearranging me once more, pressing my stomach into the mattress again until I'm at his mercy. His fingers are on me, parting me open. Then there is a stretch, a split-second burn, and he's pushing deep inside. He was there before, and it was heaven. But I'm wetter now, and the friction is even more delicious. I feel myself tighten, quick, fluttering contractions around his length. This is so unbelievably good.
Jesus,
Levi grunts. Tests a deep, shaky thrust.
You're still coming, aren't you?
Yes. No, I don't know. I twist my neck and turn back. He's looking down at me, at my flushed skin and my trembling flesh. He's not going to stop anytime soon, I know it. I'm going to come disastrously quickly again. Or maybe I'll never stop, and he's going to stare at me for every last second of it. Caging me, propped up on his huge, shaking arms, with that hungry, spellbound gleam in his eyes.
You're some kind of fantasy. Built to do this. Built for me. Fuck, B.
His rhythm picks up. Uneven and choppy, but it picks up. And I can't bear it.
You can't,
I moan. He immediately pauses. No, I whine. Don't stop.
You said.
Just, please don't look at me.
He seems to finally get it.
Hush.
He lowers himself and presses a kiss to my cheekbones. It's impossible, but it's getting even better. He's figured it out, the inside of me, how to angle his thrusts. They're more shallow, more purposeful, and I'm
babbling. Things like, oh my God, and more, and please harder, and he somehow knows what I mean.
He makes sense of me and bends down to run his tongue down the skin of my throat, to bite my shoulder, to grunt his pleasure against my nape.
I'm not sure,
he murmurs gutturally, breath harsh against my ear.
How I haven't come yet.
Me neither, I think. I say his name, muffled in the pillow, and just let go. 19. Basolateral amygdala. Arachnophobia. I'd like to take back everything I've said so far. Well, not everything. Just the whole, I'm going to dedicate my life to the pursuit of neuroscience and forsake all bodily pleasure with the sole exception of vegan Nutella bit I've been going on about. I'd like to take that part back. Having a friend slash coworker slash whatever with benefits suits me. Deliciously, fantastically, magically so. I am unbothered, moisturized, happy, in my lane, focused, flourishing. I suspect I'm having the best weeks of my adult life, including the one spent as a donuts and art camp counselor, where the extent of my duties was to stuff my face with frosting and keep an eye on 10-year-olds as they proclaimed that Cézanne paintings were cute but very orange. Maybe it's the mind-altering sex. I'm sure it's the mind-altering sex. Undoubtedly, it's the mind-altering sex. But there's more than that. Take Blink, for example. The demonstration is set for next Friday. Would I feel a tad more relaxed if I had 4 more weeks before Boris drags half of Congress in front of me? Of course. I'm obsessive, and I like to be over-prepared. But every single test we ran since our breakthrough gave us excellent results. We're moving to a stage that feels less thankless, grueling groundwork and more groundbreaking scientific advance. And most of the balls are in my court. Each helmet has to be customized for the astronaut who'll wear it based on the mapping of their brain. It's a lot of fine-tuning, and I love every second of it. Everyone does. Seeing something we've been working on tirelessly yield results is a big morale boost. And the engineers have been arriving early and staying late, buzzing around Levi and me with constant questions and... we've been keeping it secret. This thing Levi and I are doing, obviously. There's no point in telling the engineers. Or Rocio. Or Guy, who mostly alternates between questions about my non-existent husband and inviting Levi out. On Wednesday, it's basketball tonight. On Thursday, beers. Friday, what's going on this weekend? I'd feel guilty at Levi's standard response. Sorry, man, I'm swamped. But it's only temporary. Just one of those things. Girl with no interest in relationships meets dude who was into her years ago, and they take up the horizontal mambo. No strings attached. In a few weeks, I'll be home, and Guy will have Levi all to himself. In the meantime, we're stocking up on time together like camels. Time and sex. Have I mentioned the sex? I must be 20 hours behind on sleep, but somehow I'm not tired. My body might be evolving into a sophisticated bioweapon capable of converting orgasms into rest.
You should just move in,
Levi tells me on Friday morning. I blink, bleary-eyed over coffee he poured me, my brain struggling to decipher the words. What do you mean?
Bring your stuff here.
He just got home from his run and looks sweaty, disheveled, and disturbingly good.
Pack a bag. Then you won't have to go back and forth to get a change of clothes. It's not your real apartment anyway.
I study him over my mug. Maybe he's suffering from heat stroke. I can't move in with you. I'm pretty sure there's language about that in the fuck buddying contract.
Why?
Because. What if you need to watch pornography? He probably wouldn't. I'd be his live-in pornography. Bring home other girls? I don't see him doing that either. Man cave it up? It's a big house. Walk around naked? He already does it. I can't believe I'm having sex with someone with a six-pack.
I'm serious, he continues. I have a better bed, better cat, better hummingbirds.
Lies! There are no hummingbirds in your garden.
They show up when you're not around. You'll have to move in to see them.
Rocio might notice. He is quiet, waiting for me to elaborate.
And?
Then Kaylee would. And she might tell others. If I'd found out that Sam was screwing Dr. Mosley on the side, I'd have hollered it to the winds. I frown. I'm a monster. Poor Sam.
If Kaylee tells others, then she tells others. That's not a problem.
I rub my eyes. I'm not sure I want your entire team to know that I'm having a thing with a colleague. It sounds like the type of thing
for which women in STEM get unfair shit all the time.
Yep.
Fair. But even if Rocio noticed, she wouldn't know that you were at my place. Plus, she might have other stuff on her mind, given the number of times I've heard her and Kaylee call each other babe in the last week.
True. I bite my lower lip, actually considering moving in. Am I insane? I don't think so. I just like him. Like this, being with him. Fuck buddyship with Levi Ward suits me, and I just want a little more of it. FYI, I wear a retainer at night.
Sexy.
And your bathroom will be stained purple forever. Seriously, 5 showers and your bathtub will be a giant eggplant emoji. He gives me a solemn nod and pulls me closer.
It's everything I ever wanted.
It's Saturday morning, and we're cooking together. By which I mean Levi's making pancakes, and I'm standing next to him, stealing blueberries and telling him about The Mermaid's Tale, the young adult book I've been nursing since grad school. Nothing like a nanoscopic office and perennially skirting the poverty line to stimulate a gal's imagination for escapist fiction.
Wait,
he frowns.
Ondine doesn't know she's half mermaid before joining the swim team.
Nope, she doesn't know she was adopted. She finds out on the first practice, when they throw her in the water and she swims one lap in. I'll have to research how long it takes to swim one lap, but she's fast as
Michael Phelps?
Levi flips a pancake. Sure, whoever that is. And Joe Waters, cutest senior in school, sees her and becomes her faithful sidekick in her journey of self-discovery.
Do they end up together?
Nope. He goes to college, she sprouts a tail.
Can't they do long distance?
No. I won't lie to impressionable youths about the durability of human relationships. He scowls.
That's a bad ending.
It's not. It's mermazing.
And long-distance relationships are not a lie.
Happy-ending long-distance relationships sure are, just like all other happy-ending relationships. He pins me with a look. The corners of the pancake are darkening dangerously.
And ours will end poorly, too?
Nah, I wave my hand. We'll be fine, because we're casual. He stiffens, lips thinning.
I see.
He relaxes with visible effort, and there's something odd about his expression. What's that face? I ask.
What face?
That one. The one you put on when you're about to try to convince me that Nirvana is better than Ani DiFranco.
I'm not going to try to convince you.
Ah, so you admit that I'm right.
You're not right. You're stubborn and misguided and often wrong about music and other things, but there's no use in trying to reason with you.
He leans closer and kisses me, lingering, soft, deep. I lose myself a little.
I'll just have to show you.
Show me what? Levi's phone rings. He takes a moment to turn off the stove before picking up.
Yes?
The voice on the other end is almost familiar. Lily Sullivan.
Hey, I'm with B.
I give him a curious look. Why would Lily know who I am?
Sure. Of course. I'll ask.
He presses his phone against his shoulder, looking at me.
Any interest in spending a few hours hanging out with a 6-year-old who wants to be a spider vet and has strong opinions on Pokemons?
I'm briefly confused. Then I realize what he's asking, and my face splits into a grin. Lots of interest. But Levi, I whisper as he puts the phone back to his ear. Pokemon is uncountable. Lily Sullivan is warm, personable and sweet in a delicious Southern way that has me instantly liking her and feeling welcome in her beautiful early American home. Penny Sullivan, though, I fall in love with Penny the second I lay my eyes on her. Not true. I fall for her when she looks up from lying face down on the living room rug and moans with wide, pleading eyes,
"My kingdom! My entire kingdom for a Twinkie!"
"She's on her fourth day of keto," Lily whispers, "for her epilepsy." She gives me the doleful look of a mother who's been feeding her kid eggs and avocados for too many meals. I don't think she ever asked for a Twinkie before today. I remember the cravings of 9-year-old Bee, who was brutally informed by her cousin Magdalena that gummy bears are made with animal bones and didn't find out about vegan alternatives for years. Yeah, diets are funny like that. Though Penny seems fine now that Levi's here, laughing uncontrollably when he picks her up, throws her over his shoulder, and starts making his way across the house.
"Penny Lane and I will be in the backyard if you want to join us."
It's clear that they have a routine, which consists of Levi pushing a long swing that dangles from the branch of a tall tree, and Penny yelling,
"More, more!"
as Lily sits on the patio and smiles fondly at them. I take the chair next to hers and thank her when she pours me a glass of lemonade. "I'm so glad you came over. Penny was supposed to have a sleepover tonight, but we postponed after the seizure earlier this week. She didn't take it well." "I'd be grumpy too, and it's no problem at all. Your home is so lovely. Thank you for having me." She smiles, covering my hand with her palm. "Thank you for not thinking that." She gestures vaguely to herself, the house, Levi, and even me. All of this is weird, having this woman who's always calling the man you're dating. "Oh, it's not like that. We're just..." My eyes dart to the swing. Can I talk about sex within 100 feet of a child? Is there a law against it? It must be uncomfortable, considering that Levi and I once... She gives me an apologetic look. I want her to stop talking about this for many reasons, including the fact that while I have no right to be jealous, judging by the little pang in my stomach, I apparently am a little bit. Yikes, me. "It's long over," Lily continues, "and it was just a few weeks. We met here in Houston when he came to spend the summer with Peter, before the last year of his PhD. Then he went back to Pittsburgh. We were supposed to try long distance, but he said he met someone else." The pang turns into a thud. Who did Levi meet in his fifth year? Well, me, duh. But he can't have broken up with someone like Lily for... When he told Peter that we'd split, Peter admitted that he liked me and asked me out. She spreads her hands as though she cannot believe her own story. We got married 2 months later, and I got pregnant right after. Can you believe it? I smile. It's so romantic. I'm so sorry about what happened to Peter. Yeah, it was... It's not easy. She looks away. Thank you for what you're doing for Blink. I know it's high security and you can't talk about it. But when you came on board, Levi mentioned what an asset you'd be. It means a lot, having someone like you carry out Peter's legacy. And thank you for sharing Levi with us. There's a lump in my throat. He's not mine to share. I think he might be, actually.
Oh, that little... Penny, you need a hat. You can't be in the sun like that. Levi said I could.
Levi lifts one eyebrow, clearly having said no such thing. Penny sullenly stalks to her mother, only to stop in front of me with a shy, hesitant look.
Does that hurt?
She asks, shifting her weight from one foot to the other.
What?
Oh, my nose piercing? Just a tiny bit when I first got it. Many years ago. She nods skeptically.
Is your name really Bee?
It is.
Like the bug?
Yep.
Why?
Levi and I laugh. Lily covers her eyes with a hand. My mom was a poet, and she really liked a set of poems about bees. Penny nods. Apparently, it makes as much sense to her as it did to Maria De Luca Königswasser.
Where's your mom?
Gone now.
Oh, my daddy's gone too.
I can feel the tension in the adults, but there's something matter-of-fact about the way Penny talks.
What's your favorite animal?
Will you be disappointed if I don't say bees? She mulls it over.
Depends. Not if it's a good one.
Okay. Are cats good?
Yes! They're Levi's favorite, too. He has a black kitty.
That's right,
Levi interjects.
And Bee has a kitty, too. A see-through one.
I glare at him.
My favorite animals are spiders,
Penny informs me.
Oh, spiders are,
I suppress a shudder.
Cool, too.
My sister's favorite animals are blobfish. Have you ever seen one? Her eyes widen, and she climbs on my lap to look at the picture I'm pulling up on my phone. God, I love children. I love this child. I look up and notice the way Levi's staring at me with an odd light in his eyes.
Is your sister a child?
Penny asks after making a face at the blobfish. She's my twin.
Really? Does she look like you?
Yep. I scroll to my favorites and tap on a picture of the two of us at 15, before I started what Rika calls my journey of softcore body modification.
Wow, which one is you?
On the right.
Do you get along?
Yeah. Well, we insult each other a lot too, but yeah.
Do you live together?
I shake my head. I actually don't see her in person much. She travels a lot.
Are you mad that she's gone?
Ah, children, and their loaded questions. I used to be, but now I'm just a bit sad. But it's okay. She needs to travel just as much as I need to stay put.
My friend said that if you're a twin, your children will be twins too.
You have a higher probability, yes.
Do you want twins?
Penny, Lily reprimands her gently. No grilling guests on family planning before lunch. Oh, that's fine. I would love to have twins. I used to dream of it, actually. Even though at this point I probably won't, for obvious reasons, that I won't bother Penny with. She smiles.
That's good, because so does Levi.
I feel myself go crimson and look at Levi, expecting to find him just as embarrassed. But he's staring at me with the same expression from before, only about 20 times more intense and...
Does anyone want sherbet?
Lily asks, clearly picking up on the weirdness.
Mother,
Penny says darkly.
Must you torture me?
I got special ice cream at the store for you.
Penny's eyes widen and she runs inside the house.
Poor girl,
Lily mutters as we follow her inside. Keto ice cream's probably disgusting.
You underestimate how desperate she might be, I tell her. There are things I used to find appalling after going vegan that I started loving out of-
Bee, look! I want to show you something.
What's that?
I smile and crouch to her height.
This is Shaggy, Ma.
My eyes fall on the stuffed tarantula plush toy in her hands, and sound recedes. My vision fogs. I'm hot and cold at the same time. And all of a sudden, everything goes dark.
That was so cool! Levi, I love your girlfriend so much.
I know the feeling.
Goodness, should I call 911?
Nah, she's fine.
Everything's foggy, but I think I'm in Levi's arms. He's patiently holding my head up, no concern in his tone. In fact, he sounds weirdly charmed.
This happens to her every other day.
Slander, I mumble, fighting to open my eyes.
Lies.
He smiles down at me, and he's so handsome. I love his face.
Look who's gracing us with her presence.
Is it low blood sugar?
Lily asks apprehensively.
Can I get you anything, too?
B is like me,
Penny is saying, clapping her hands excitedly.
She has the same bursts of electricity in her brain. She has seizures.
It's a bit like seizures, I say, straightening up.
B has a useless parasympathetic nervous system, which is an endless source of entertainment,
Levi explains to Penny.
Excuse me, I scowl. Some of us don't have the luxury of stable blood pressure.
I didn't say it wasn't cute,
he murmurs inaudibly against my temple. The scratch of his stubble against my skin is rough, his lips soft. Penny seems to be a fan, too.
Does your twin faint, too?
Nope, she got all the best things, like the ability to burp the French national anthem.
It's so cool.
It's actually a very maladaptive autonomic response.
Can you do it again?
Not really, sweetie. Not on command.
When do you do it, then?
It depends. Sometimes it's highly stressful, surprising situations. Other times it's just seeing things that I'm afraid of, like snakes or spiders. Penny's eyes widen.
So if I show you Shaggy again?
Levi and Lily yell,
No!
At the same time, but it's too late. Penny whips the toy back out from behind her back, and everything goes dark again. We stay with the Sullivans all day, and after Shaggy gets locked in an out-of-reach cupboard, we have a blast. By the time we're ready to leave, I know more about Pokemon than I ever cared to, and Penny has tried to make me faint again approximately 20 times by drawing spiders on every available piece of paper. That little monster. I love her to death. But when we say goodbye in the entrance, agreeing that we should do it again soon, it's a bit like a pianoforte crashing on my head.
How long will you be in Houston?
Lily asks. All I can do is burrow farther into Levi's side. Unclear. The project was originally supposed to last around 3 months, but things are going very well, so I shrug. Levi's arm tightens around me. I'm fully aware that Levi and I are the Merriam-Webster definition of transitory. But I'm enjoying this so much. His company, his friends, his food. I'll be sad when this is over in a couple of weeks.
Are your parents still going to be in town next week?
Lily asks. Levi's arm tightens again, this time in a completely different fashion. Before, it was possessive. Comforting. Now it's just tense.
Yeah.
Ugh, sorry about that. Let me know if you need anything. Curious, I bring it up as soon as we're alone in the truck. Your family will be here? He starts the truck, looking straight ahead. I'm beginning to recognize his moods, but this one I'm not familiar with. Yet.
My parents. There's some event on the Air Force base here.
And you're going to see them?
We'll probably have dinner.
When?
Not sure. My father will let me know when he's free.
I nod. And then I hear a voice that sounds a lot like mine ask, Can I come? He puffs out a laugh.
Are you a fan of strained silences interrupted by the occasional, pass the garlic salt?
It can't be that bad. Otherwise, you wouldn't even get together.
You'd be surprised by the length my father will go to let me know the depth of his disappointment.
What about your mom? He just shrugs. Listen, I can drop hints on how amazingly Blink is going. I can say that you're the go-to engineer for most neuroscientists. I can print out your Nature publication and use it to gently dab my mouth after the first course.
There better only be one course, and B,
he shakes his head.
It's not that I don't want you to meet them, or that I'm embarrassed. It's just that it's going to be truly bad.
At least you have a shitty family to hold on to, I think. But I don't say it. I'm almost positive that Levi's parents are not as horrible as he says. I'm equally positive that he experiences them like that, and that's all that matters. I don't want to be pushy, but I also really want to be there. I could come, and we could pretend that I'm your girlfriend. He gives me a puzzled look.
There wouldn't be much to pretend.
No, we can pretend that we're an inch from marriage. I can put on my Lotus septum ring and leave my tattoos out. I'll wear my AOC top and ripped jeans. Think how much they'll hate me. I can see how little he wants to smile, and how little he can help it.
No one could hate you. Not even my father.
I wink at him. Game on, then. 20. Ventral tegmental area. Romantic love. Levi's father, as it turns out, is perfectly capable of hating me. And so are Levi's mother and his eldest brother, who join us for dinner in a less than pleasantly surprising plot twist. But first things first. Before the dinner, there are days of intense prep for the upcoming Blink demonstration. Bolts are tightened, stimulating frequencies are adjusted. Guy is prodded, poked, and shocked on his scalp. He's a trooper. The demonstration is about the helmet, but as test subject number one, he'll be front and center, and it's clear that he's nervous about it. In the past couple of days, he's been moody, anxious, and more tired than ever. I think he's been keeping his fears to himself to avoid disrupting morale, which makes me want to hug him. The other night, I stopped by his office to check on him. He startled like a coil spring and quickly closed all his tabs. I guess even astronauts de-stress on YouPorn? Rocio and Kaylee are getting chummier and chummier. I overhear them in the break room while heating up the stir-fry I made yesterday in an attempt to impress Levi with the one dish I can cook, which resulted in the painful realization that I can cook zero dishes. If she's willing to say a few words about how the movement started, that would be amazing, Rocio is saying. She seems pretty private. We could blur her face, auto-tune her, use a helium voice app.
Baby, that would undercut the seriousness of the message.
What about a Guy Fawkes mask?
I do love V for Vendetta, but no.
What are you guys talking about? I ask, spearing a piece of carrot that manages to be at once burnt and undercooked. Amazing. This has to be a transferable skill set.
You know hashtag fair graduate admissions, right?
Kaylee asks. I drop my carrot back into the Tupperware.
Ah, vaguely. It's about guaranteeing inclusivity in the admission process. Student organizations are really active in the movement, but Ro and I are technically not students, so...
She turns her laptop.
We're making the hashtag Fair Graduate Admissions website. Not ready yet, but we'll launch it soon. There will be information, resources, mentorship opportunities, and we'll ask Marie Curie for an interview.
I finish chewing and swallow. Even though I never put the carrot in my mouth, I must be eating my tongue.
Marie Curie? Not the real Marie Curie. That would be hilarious, though.
Kaylee giggles at the misunderstanding for about half a minute. Rocio stares at her for the entire duration, hard-eyed. Ah, young love.
It's the person who started the conversation. We want to launch the website with her interview, but she's pretty anon.
She spreads her hands. Her nails are an iridescent baby blue. I clear my throat.
She might agree to do it via email.
This is actually a great idea. Ro and Kaylee exchange an offensively impressed look. Then Kaylee licks her thumb and wipes something from the corner of Rocio's eye.
Hang on, baby, you have a smudge.
I walk out of the room holding Rocio's gaze and mouthing, "Goodbye, baby." I cannot overstate how much I love this relationship development. With so much at stake for Friday,
Everyone's too frantic to notice that Levi has taken to bringing coffee to my workstation, to making sure that I don't go too long without a break, to smiling faintly and asking if I'm going to pass out whenever a bug flies into the lab, to teasing me about the little mounds of treats I leave for Felicet. I have noticed. And I know he's just being a friend, a kind person, an awesome collaborator. But it hurts a little. Not hurt, but those pangs, those little twinges I experience when Levi stares at me. When we're running together and he effortlessly matches his pace to mine. When he leaves me the yellow vegan M&Ms because he knows they're my favorites. Yes, they taste better than the red. Well, those little twinges are starting to get a bit painful. Knifing at my general chest area. Weird. Odd. Strange. Peculiar. I make a note in my reminders app. Visit primary care doc in Bethesda. I'm overdue for a checkup. Anywho, work's fantastic. Sex is even better. And hashtag fair graduate admissions is about to shake things up in academia. The last bastion of the medieval guild apprenticeship model. Things are going great, right? Wrong. Let's loop back to the dinner. The first hint that it might possibly not go super well, or, as I think of it, my first uh-oh, comes when I find out that Levi's family suggested having dinner at an upscale steakhouse. And when I say suggested, I mean decided. I've no problem with people eating meat, but the complete disregard for Levi's dietary preferences seems less than fatherly. The smell of grilled steak envelops us the second we step inside. I glance up at Levi and he says, apologetic, "I'll make you dinner afterward," which causes a bit of a tsunami inside me. Seriously, the pangs? Those are nothing. I'm being swept over by a ridiculous surge of affection for this vegan man whose probably annoying parents invited him to a steakhouse and whose first concern is that I don't go hungry tonight. It's a warm feeling that threatens to explode inside my chest, which is why I stop him in the entrance with a hand on his gray button-down and pull him to me for a kiss. We don't exactly kiss in public, and even in private, I'm not usually the one who initiates contact. His eyes widen, but he instantly bends to meet me halfway. "I'll also, I murmur against his lips, "do stuff for you. Afterward." Whoa, very sexy bee, very smooth, you temptress. He flushes with heat.
"You will?"
I nod, suddenly shy. But we kiss, and that's my second uh-oh, because a throat clears behind us, and I immediately know whose it is. Oops. Levi's father is a shorter, slightly less handsome, slightly less built version of him. His mother is where he gets his wavy hair and green eyes from. And the third person, there's another man with them, and it's clear that Levi's surprised. Given the resemblance, it's also clear that he's Levi's brother. Oh my God. This is Levi's family, Levi's life. I find myself incredibly curious. I want to know everything about him, which is probably why I'm staring a little too hard and missing the introductions. Possibly a third uh-oh.
"My eldest brother, Isaac, and this is Dr. B. Konigswasser."
I smile, ready for my brightest, "nice to meet you." But Levi's father interrupts me.
"A girlfriend, huh?"
I try not to stiffen. "Yep, coworker too." He nods indifferently and heads for the table, tossing an indifferent,
"I told you he probably wasn't gay,"
to his wife, who follows him with a healthy dose of indifference. Isaac goes next after a brief smile to the two of us, a touch less indifferent. The kicker is, when I glance up at Levi, he seems indifferent too. He just takes my hand and leads me to the table.
"You can leave any time, okay?"
I wonder who he's telling that to. Levi and I need about half a second with the menu before settling on our order. House salad, no cheese, olive oil dressing. We're silent as his parents continue a conversation with Isaac that clearly began in the car. No one has asked Levi so much as, "How are you?" And he seems disturbingly fine with it. If anything, he looks elsewhere. Staring in the mid-distance, playing with the fingers of my left hand under the table, like I'm a miraculous anti-stress toy. I'm no expert in family dinners, or in families, but this is fucked up. So when there's a moment of quiet, I try to remind the Wards of our existence. "Mr. Ward, do you—"
"Colonel,"
he says.
"Please, call me Colonel."
Then immediately turns to say something to Isaac. How's that for a fourth uh-oh? The first interaction is after the food arrives. "How's your salad, Levi?" his mother asks. He finishes chewing before saying,
"Great."
He manages to sound sincere, as though he's not a 6'4", 200-pound brick house who needs 4,000 calories a day. I study him in disbelief and realize something. He's not calm or indifferent or relaxed. He's closed off, shuttered, inscrutable.
"All good at work?"
Isaac asks.
"Yep. Couple of new projects."
"We recently had a breakthrough on something that has the potential to be great," I say excitedly. "Something Levi's leading."
"Anyway, NASA will reconsider your application for the astronaut corps,"
the colonel asks, ignoring me. Uh-oh, five. Should this have been a drinking game?
"I doubt it, unless I cut off my feet."